are listening to the post-SmackDown livecast here on PWTorchLivecast.com. My name is Greg Parks. I am PW Torch columnist as well as recapper extraordinaire of WWE SmackDown. Tonight's show emanating from Nashville, Tennessee. You can read my report if you didn't see the show. It's up on PWTorch.com. I think it was a step up from last week's SmackDown episode. We've got a lot of establishing Dolph Ziggler as the guy who has the credibility to take on Dean Ambrose at SummerSlam for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. They did a lot in the opening segment to establish Ziggler as a viable challenger, to really light a fire under him via the mic work of his opponent, Dean Ambrose, who got a little heelish with Ziggler in questioning Ziggler's desire, questioning Ziggler's resolve, questioning Ziggler's dedication. And Ziggler eventually had to face Bray Wyatt with his shot at Ambrose on the line in the main event of this show. So Ziggler, establishing himself as someone who's not running from a fight, basically going up to Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan, the authority figures on SmackDown, and after the challenge was laid out by Wyatt in the opening segment, said, yeah, I want this opportunity against Wyatt, even though I have nothing to gain. I have to prove to myself, I have to prove to Dean Ambrose, I have to prove to the WWE Universe that I am a worthy challenger to Ambrose at SummerSlam. So Ziggler took on Bray Wyatt in the main event, defeated Bray Wyatt in the main event, so Ziggler will go on to SummerSlam to face Ambrose for the WWE World Championship. He was attacked by Eric Rowan after the match. Dean Ambrose made save. So looks like it's being positioned now as Ziggler and Ambrose against Wyatt and Rowan in the lead-up to SummerSlam. So I was impressed with the work that went into to Dolph Ziggler here on this show. I was impressed with what WWE did with him here. I liked what they did with him in building him up against Dean Ambrose. First, a couple quick plugs before we go to the phone lines. And if you want to talk SmackDown tonight with me, the number to call is 646-721-9828, talking tonight's episode of SmackDown. Last night, I joined James Caldwell in the post-Raw live cast, and we talked about the three-hour episode of Raw for about 90 minutes or so. That is available on pwtorchlivecast.com. Earlier today, I was on the live cast with Wade Keller this afternoon, Pro Wrestling Torch editor, and always a good conversation with him. We talked about 90 minutes about Raw and NXT and various other items of note in the world of wrestling. So this is my third live cast in 2 days, which, as I told James yesterday, I believe is a record of some kind in the PW Torch Hall of Numbers. Maybe I'll get enshrined someday for that. But talking SmackDown here tonight, some of the other items of note on the show before we jump into phone calls. The number one contender for Miz's Intercontinental Championship was found, and that man is Apollo Crews, who won a triple threat match that also contained Baron Corbin and Kalisto. So it looks like Crews versus The Miz will be on the docket for SummerSlam. Two teases of women's matches that didn't happen. Eva Marie faked an injury to get out of a match with Becky Lynch, and then Natalya attacked Carmella during Carmella's entrance when it was supposed to be Carmella versus Natalya in something similar to what Natalya did last week in attacking Becky Lynch prior to her scheduled match. So establishing Natalya as that heel on the women's roster. We were looking at this episode of SmackDown as well as something where we could gauge some differences. SmackDown debuted last week without a lot of differences, and this week they added different graphics on the side of the screen when wrestlers made their entrances with some facts about them, which was really neat. I enjoyed that. They also did, instead of the regular backstage interview segment, which they did do or tried to do with Randy Orton and Charlie Caruso, they had Renee Young at the SmackDown pre- and post-show set. She talked to Carmella. She talked to Dean Ambrose there. So that was a nice change of pace as well, just to differentiate SmackDown from Raw. And, of course, tonight was the debut of American Alpha from NXT as they took on the Vaudevillains. the Alpha getting the victory in about 3.5 minutes. So those were the big news items coming out of this SmackDown, as well as AJ Styles and John Cena and their in-ring confrontation. Of course, Brock Lesnar making somewhat of a surprise appearance. If you stayed off Twitter or stayed off the internet, it was a surprise appearance. Brock Lesnar coming out and interfering in Randy Orton's match with Fandango before he was kicked out of the arena by Shane McMahon. So Lesnar giving the old, well, good for the goose is good for the gander treatment to Randy Orton here on this evening. So SmackDown in the books for another week. The second episode of the live, well, technically the third, but second post-roster split live SmackDown on Tuesday nights on the USA Network. Once again, that number to call in if you want to talk. SmackDown is 646-721-9828. I am here for as long as you guys want to talk SmackDown. So you call in, I'll keep going. That's basically the gist of it tonight.
If you're like me, you've got a list of favorite websites and a list of favorite podcasts that you visit either every day or throughout the week, but there's probably not a lot of crossover between the two. However, with PW Torch Livecast, that's different. If you're a listener of this show, you should also be visiting our main website, pwtorch.com, loaded with updates covering news in more depth than you'll find anywhere else. Editorials you won't find anywhere else, live TV coverage and pay-per-view coverage that's unmatched, and so much more on a newly redesigned, optimized, lightning-fast website. That's pwtorch.com. Check it out every day and bookmark it. No matter what device you're using, whether it's a mobile phone, a tablet, a laptop, or a desktop, there's a version that fits your screen and customized for your device. Check it out, pwtorch.com, one of the top sources of pro wrestling insider news since 1987 and online as a website since 1999. Don't miss out. Don't just listen to the live cast. In between live cast listens or while you're listening to the live cast, check out the latest headlines and exclusive articles at pwtorch.com. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
Without further ado, let's go to our first call. That is coming from the 862 area code. 862, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Kylan from North New Jersey.
Kylan, it's been a while since I've talked to you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Anything on SmackDown you want to talk about tonight?
Of course. I have my usual 3 points here. Question number one, Greg. If Apollo Crews does not win the Intercontinental title at either SummerSlam or perhaps Backlash, if they hold the title match until then, could you see Shelton Benjamin be plugged into that position?
Okay.
Question number two. Which of these scenarios is more likely to happen? Dean Ambrose retains the WWE title and Dolph Ziggler becomes insanely frustrated and turns, or Dolph comes out with a surprise win at SummerSlam, which will signal that management has completely changed their mind on him and decides to push him long term.
Mm-hmm.
And question number three, since Daniel Bryan just confirmed to Renee Young that SmackDown will have their own set of tag titles on the Talking Smack post-show, I would like to know from you who you think will be the first whatever the SmackDown Tag Champions will be called.
All right. Interesting questions, Kylan, as always. Appreciate the call here on a Tuesday night. Starting with the tag champs, my obvious first instinct is to say American Alpha. I mean, why not? Why not put the titles on them? You know, you look at some of the other teams in the SmackDown division as far as tag teams go. The Usos are there. None of the heel teams. You know, you got the Ascension. You got Breezango and the Vaudevillains. None of the heel teams really stand out to me as a team that you'd want to have as your first set of tag team champions. So I think it's really down to American Alpha and the Usos. And I absolutely think American Alpha could be that team. You know, you've got, I guess, if you want to put Ryder and Raleigh together as a team as the Hype Bros, that's a possibility. Eric Rowan and Bray Wyatt, I guess that's if they stay together, which I wouldn't really take as a good sign for Bray Wyatt if in the era of the roster split, he's WWE sees him best as a tag team wrestler with Eric Rowan rather than being one of the guys who is able to break out as a singles wrestler with the roster. I think that would be a bad sign if WWE saw Bray in that light. So I, you know, American Alpha stands out almost like it's a too obvious of a pick to be the first tag team champions on SmackDown. But that would be my guess. And I don't know how they go about it. If it's some sort of tournament, if they, you know, there's only really five or six teams on SmackDown. So I'm not sure what you would do to establish a team unless you just throw them in a battle royal or throw them in a six-team, you know, some sort of six-team match or a tournament. But we will see on that. I'm not sure when that's going to be established. The same with the Women's Championship on SmackDown, which Daniel Bryan confirmed that will be happening in an interview, which makes sense if you're going to have a tag title for SmackDown to oppose the Raw tag title. It makes sense to have a women's title on SmackDown, just as the Raw women have their own title. So we will see about that. What's more likely, Dean Ambrose retaining and Ziggler turning, or Ziggler winning? I got to say Ambrose retaining and Ziggler turning. I think there were seeds planted here, even though Ambrose, to me, came off as more heelish in that opening segment. I thought the seeds were planted for Ziggler to have at least a reason to turn heel. And so, you know, maybe as Kylan brought up, maybe the frustration gets to him after the loss at SummerSlam to Dean Ambrose, and maybe that's the impetus that turns Dolph Ziggler heel. But I really think, and I wrote about it for the for my upcoming column in the Torch newsletter, I think a heel turn would refresh Ziggler. I think he's still very athletic in the ring, but it's almost like he's gotten too comfortable in the ring. And, you know, he's got a lot of the same heat segments and you know, the same comeback. And his in-ring work is good, but it just feels too familiar at this point. And I wonder if a heel turn would allow him to try to change things up and try to reinvent not only the character, but his in-ring work. And I think that would be, that would really make SmackDown feel refreshed as well. And the first question, if Apollo Crews doesn't win the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam, does Shelton Benjamin become the next challenger? That's a possibility. I think what we saw tonight with Kalisto and Baron Corbin, especially given the post-match shenanigans after the triple threat, I think it showed that those two guys, Corbin less so because Corbin versus The Miz isn't really a matchup you'd want to go with. They're two very strong heels, and you don't want to have the crowd really cheer either one of them. But if a babyface somewhere along the way, a Cruz or a Kalisto or a Shelton Benjamin, if Benjamin comes back as a face, if they end up beating The Miz for the IC title, I think Baron Corbin would be first off the bench to be a challenger. I think he's at that position right now. But it's you know, I see Benjamin coming in and slotting in that spot. You know, there's some other guys, Jinder Mahal coming in on Raw, Curt Hawkins rumored to be coming in on SmackDown, and those guys I see slotting at a lower level, at least at first. Benjamin's a guy I could see coming in, slotting a little higher than those guys. Certainly not, you know, not coming in and challenging right away in the main event scene. I think there's some, there's a school of thought that Benjamin was underutilized. I mean, he was Dolph Ziggler before Dolph Ziggler was Dolph Ziggler. You know, he was the guy who was underutilized, would get a push here and there, but never really seemed to make it past a certain point. And I think a lot of people are looking at Benjamin with nostalgia-colored glasses and thinking he could jump in right away and be a main player. I don't see that as necessarily being the case. I see him slotting in at an IC title level. So if you know, we know when Benjamin's going to debut. We saw the video package last week, but I think it's certainly a possibility that if not right after Cruz, then at some point soon after, he could get a shot at The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. So thanks, Kylan, for starting us off with that phone call. We go to our next call now, coming from the 478 area code. 478, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Darrell from Georgia. How you doing today, Greg?
Doing well, Darrell. How are you?
I'm okay. I see you going doing your marathon thing with the live cast today.
Yeah,
the last couple of days.
You've joined me for all three, haven't you now?
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for taking the ride with me.
No problem. One thing I want to piggyback on with titles, I think they said something about a woman's title maybe. First, before I see them bring a women's title, I would like them to rethink how they're doing the women. They got them not looking like athletes, but more looking like the title that they got rid of, Diva. And I hope that's not something that they're going to go back to, because I see Nikki might come over because she's a free agent or something like that. So I'm just hoping that's something they don't go back to. Second, I love the two promo sections that they had at the top of both hours. Seemed sort of like old school Raw in a 2-hour form, but they were both good. I don't think that it added too much to the rivalry of feuds, but I can see where they're going. And the last thing, if you could speak on also, the three guys that was in that triple threat match, I wish they would look at trying to build them and make them an in-depth character, because they have a name, but they just don't have no character to go with them. So the IC title match don't seem of importance or anything, because the characters who are going against the Miz, who are a strong character himself, don't seem like important.
Mm-hmm.
So those three things are something that I want to bring up and see what you thought about. And I'm going to listen to the rest of the show.
All right. Thanks, Darrell. The going to the top with the women, SmackDown is not a roster that features a strong women's division at this point. And changes could be made, additions could be made here and there. So it's always possible. But certainly with Eva Marie, certainly it's funny that the news about the women's championship coming to SmackDown or a version of a women's championship belt coming to SmackDown comes on the same day where they tease two women's matches and deliver a neither. The whole Eva Marie thing, I mean, she gets great heat, but the great clip was on her entrance. They said she won the Diva Search in 2013. And I'm thinking, man, it feels like she's been around longer than that. Like, I was shocked that that was the most recent Diva Search, because I thought the most recent Diva Search was years before that. But you know, she's been in WWE for 3 years, and they, granted, she's been doing Total Divas. She's been off doing this and that. So I'm sure she hasn't been training 100% of the time at the Performance Center or you know, what have you. But 3 years in, and they don't trust her to do a match. And yes, this works into her heel character, and it does garner her more heel heat, which is good. But eventually, she's going to have to wrestle. And I don't know that WWE trusts her to do that. It reminds me of Nathan Jones when they would do anything to prevent Nathan Jones from actually having to wrestle. They would come up with all these excuses, and that's kind of what it is with Eva Marie. And you had Natalya attacking Carmella. I get that it fits in with what Natalya did last week, attacking Becky Lynch from behind, and that sort of thing. But it doesn't send a good message when you do something like that twice on one show. It sends the message that you don't have a lot of confidence in these women. Eva Marie, Carmella, maybe, to hold up their end bargain. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see if the women's division does get strengthened eventually. But, you know, you've got two really solid workers in Becky Lynch and Natalya. You've got Naomi, who is hit or miss. I think she's more hit than miss. You've got Alexa Bliss, who, as much as we've seen her in NXT, she's still somewhat of an unknown commodity. And then you've got Eva Marie and Carmella. So, it's something to keep an eye on. The booking, I see where Durrell's coming from, more diva-ish the first few weeks of SmackDown than really top women's competitors in their field vying for a title, which is kind of what I think WWE had been going for a while with the women. I agree on the promo segments. They were both – I really liked – opening promo with Ambrose and Ziggler. I really liked the content. I liked Ziggler showing some fire, which isn't something that he always does. I liked Ambrose sort of pushing Ziggler buttons and getting Ziggler to that point to take that character to the next level. And I think that's needed. And that was the segment that was needed to make Ziggler, or to help him get to the point where he's seen seriously as a title contender on a SummerSlam show. That was what was needed tonight, that promo segment. And I thought both guys did a job. I thought both guys, the scripting was tight on both guys. I really liked it. Cena Styles, I didn't like as much. I thought it was still pretty good. You know, it's almost like WWE is desperate to reassure their fans and the John Cena fan base that, no, he may be doing hosting the Teen Choice Awards. He may be hosting the ESPY Awards. He may be guest hosting the Today Show. He's still a WWE superstar first and foremost. And this is where WWE's insecurities kind of shine. When Cena is out here doing this promo, and it's a promo that he's done before, the I Love WWE, WWE is My Life promo. He's done it before. So it kind of rehashes territory. It kind of makes AJ Styles look stupid for thinking Cena's going to go away. You know, he's been a top guy for almost 15 years now. And Styles comes across as a little delusional, and not in the good heel way, but a little delusional thinking one loss to AJ Styles would somehow drive John Cena out of WWE. That didn't ring true for me, that part of the segment. Overall, I'd give it a passing grade. There were some little things like that I didn't care for, but it eventually got, it was a means to an end to get to Styles versus Cena for SummerSlam, and they accomplished that. The third point that Durrell had was the three guys in the triple threat and not really having fully developed characters. I agree. Corbin's got the lone wolf thing going. I think his deal is that he's a man of few words, so you know, a sit-down interview, a video package where he expounds on the virtues of his character is not something you're going to get from Corbin. I think the silent assassin type is okay for him. Kalisto, he's a guy who is the underdog, and they did some character work with him leading up to his U.S. title feud with Ryback. It's the size of the fight in the dog. It's stereotypical small man gimmick, I guess, fighting from behind, that sort of thing. Apollo Crews, you know, we really don't know much about, and hopefully with him facing off against The Miz, we'll get an opportunity to get a little insight into who Apollo Crews is, what makes him tick. But, you know, we're 2 weeks into this roster split, and hopefully WWE, looking at the big picture of their roster, sees the same thing Durrell does, and they say, ooh, you know, here's an opportunity to get Apollo Crews some character work. Here's an opportunity to tell Kalisto's story. He may be a mid-carder, but let's let fans inside a little bit into what he's all about. So with the combined rosters, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for that. I think the roster split is a good opportunity to explore those characters, and hopefully that's what happens. But we'll see. Thank you, Darrell, for that call. Thank you for being with me through my odyssey here through the three live casts in 2 days. Good talking to you and hearing your thoughts and questions. So the next caller on the queue is the 718 area code. 718, you're on the post-SmackDown live cast. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg. This is Mike from Brooklyn. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. As far as tonight's show, I really liked it. I mean, I thought the pacing of the show as well. You know, 2 hours is, you know, also helps, you know, the setting of the show. And, you know, they did a lot of things to, like, differentiate from Raw, you know, with the new interview set to also, you know, like when the wrestlers are coming down, they got their, you know, height, weight, and, you know, hometown, which is, you know, also kind of cool to see, too. And, yeah, I'm in agreement with you with some things, you know, with the AJ Cena thing, they got to tweak because, you know, it's like Cena cut out. Me and my, you know, two young boys, we just sitting here and we just said, like, you know, it's like the same repetitive, you know, I'm here for life quarterly promo he cut.
Right.
It's like the same thing. Same thing. But, you know, I expect them to tear the house down. And also, I think SummerSlam is shaping up. But, you know, to expand on, you know, what was said a little earlier about the, you know, the second, you know, the women's title and the tag titles coming in. How long do you think they should hold it off, Greg? Like, do you think they should, do you think, like, that should be maybe, like, some of the focus of, you know, the brand only, you know, moving forward, take first pay-per-view, like Backlash, like introducing those titles? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike, and thanks for the call. I'm of the opinion that they should really get into those titles immediately. I think the longer you hold off introducing those titles, the more of an opportunity it gives fans. And I talked about this with Wade Keller today on the afternoon live cast. You know, the more an opportunity it gives fans to question, what are these guys fighting for? You know, you throw American Alpha out there in a tag match with the Vaudevillains. Okay, what does that mean? You know, the American Alpha wins. What does that mean? You know, in context of a wrestling match, although the wrestlers make a big deal of wanting to entertain the fans, the point of a wrestling match and winning and losing should be climbing the proverbial ladder to reach the championship. You know, putting yourself in a position where you get challenged for the title somewhere. But if there's no title, then what do the wins mean? You know, I guess the jobber established on Raw this week that, you know, you get more money for winning, which is always nice. They don't even have to introduce the actual physical titles and put them on someone immediately, but let's have Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan next week say, hey, we're going to introduce tag titles. We're going to introduce a women's title. It may be down the line, like Mike brought up, maybe save it for a Backlash or an off-brand pay-per-view, but say, okay, we're going to establish these titles. Tag team title, women's title is coming to SmackDown. We're gonna crown the first champion at Backlash or wherever, but until then, we are going to pay close attention to the tag matches, to the women's matches, and, you know, if they decide to do a tournament, you know, we're gonna see who impresses us with wins and losses, who impresses us with their performance, and seed them in that tournament accordingly. Or, you know, we're gonna pick three teams or three women to have a triple threat tag team match for the titles or a triple threat women's match for the titles. We're going to give you all opportunities each week to wrestle leading up to that match, and at the end of that time, we're going to pick the three teams or the three win that we feel has impressed us the most. So give some sort of guideline for the divisions going forward leading up to that eventual title match. I think that's what I would do. So they've got a couple of options here that they can work with that could work. And SmackDown, I didn't think they used that camera angle, that above the ring corner camera angle that they used quite a bit last week. I was disappointed that they didn't use it as much this week. I liked that as a differentiation from Raw. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the on-screen graphics were different. They were unique. I thought they were very interesting. The backstage set with Renee Young was good. And it shocked me that Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan have played a more prominent role through the first 2 weeks of this roster split than Stephanie McMahon has. I thought for sure she would be the focal point of the roster split on Raw, and Shane and Daniel Bryan would be more the background players on SmackDown. And just the opposite has been the case. So, not that I feel that they've been out of place, having to come out and corral Brock Lesnar. Dolph Ziggler's gimmick, for better or for worse, is, hey, management's always been holding me back. I'm just trying to do the best I can. So you needed management-type figures for him to rail against. And that's what came in those two backstage segments when Ziggler demanded the match with Wyatt. And then when Shane and Daniel Bryan tried to talk him out of it, Ziggler was just as vehement in keeping the match. So that surprises me. The amount of screen time the authority figures have gotten on SmackDown vis-a-vis Raw has surprised me in the first 2 weeks. As we reach the top of the hour, 11 o'clock here on the East Coast, I would like to welcome those of you who are just joining us on the post-SmackDown PW Torch livecast. I am PWTorch.com columnist and SmackDown recapper for almost 10 years now on PWTorch.com. Greg Parks with you here for the post-SmackDown livecast, which I believe is something that we're going to do here going forward on PWTorch.com. PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm going to have a post-SmackDown livecast. That's going to be the norm going forward. I hope I'm not breaking any news here without permission, but I think that's the plan. If you want to call in and talk tonight's SmackDown, the number to call is 646-721-9828. As we go to the next call, it is the 773 area code. 773, please state your name and where you're calling from. 773, you're on.
Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris. Good to have you along. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, the rule is an unsung rule. When you're binging, you have to watch three episodes so you can know you can get into something, correct? So now we're on episode two of SmackDown. So next week will determine whether I'm going to continue to watch this product, you know, similar to one.
Couple corrections here for us. To binge the show, you need to watch the back-to-back-to-back. So unless you watched last week's episode of SmackDown right before, I don't think this counts as binging. And secondly,
I know we're trying to say the same thing. No, I was saying I just mentioned that I was like to watch three episodes or something to determine whether you want to stick around. But I know it's more episodes of SmackDown coming, and I'm just saying you got the option on Netflix to you got the whole season, but you can watch them back to back. But to stick around, you have to make it past the third episode because my friend she watched Jessica Jones. She only made it to the second episode because she couldn't understand it, so she backed off. And I can't tell her to watch the third episode because she never made it to she didn't complete the second episode, so she was not interested. You see what I'm saying?
So that's a roundabout way of saying we shouldn't make any big proclamations about SmackDown. Until we see that third episode. Is that right?
I'm talking about me. I'm sorry, that's my thing. But let me get on with it.
I've made enough of a mess of this. Just take it for us.
I had real high expectations for SmackDown simply because I remember how SmackDown was a really good wrestling show at one point in time, give or take. And with Dave Bryan, it felt like a big promise, and I thought they were going to deliver, but it seemed like they bait and switches. They made Raw a better wrestling product than SmackDown, and I'm just holding in because we got Cena. Now, I wish if I could flip it around, I would rather have Roman Reigns because at least he's self-destructing or something over. You know, he's having more problems than us have to deal with Cena and his Hollywood celebrity that he got instead of the AJ saying, I need to get through you to get to that title. That's what I want to hear. I need to get through you. You said you anybody want to do something in this company, they got to get through you. So I need to get through you to get that title. Not, okay, my Hollywood status is this, and I really love this, but I'm not going anywhere because I'm not The Rock. You got the Hollywood book. Go over there. We see you over there. Stay over there and give us our wrestling show because I really wanted to see maybe Bray Wyatt versus AJ, AJ versus Dean Ambrose. Ziggler had chances. Shawn Michaels, Ziggler, these multiple characters that he appearing to be. Because I don't know if he's Shawn Michaels one day. I don't know if he whoever. You see what I'm saying? Because I see what he's doing. And he's using Shawn Michaels' super kick. I'm waiting on him to get down the ground. The heartbreak. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Ziggler. I was waiting on him if he win the belt, then he hold it covered like Shawn Michaels. Because who are you? You know, so I just really wanted more. I'm just holding out because if Dean get past Ziggler, we might get some real SmackDown. And if AJ get past Cena, we might get some good matches. Cena go to Hollywood and stay over there. You see what I'm saying? How's that?
Okay, Boris, thanks for the call. Cena and being Hollywood, it's wishful thinking by some fans. But it's not going to happen. You know, I think he's being completely honest when he says at heart he's a WWE guy. And there's always going to be one foot of his in WWE, even if the other foot is out in Hollywood doing movies or doing talk shows or what have you. American Grit just renewed for a second season on Fox, so he'll be taking time off to do that again. We should really, to be honest, we should cherish Cena while he's here. Because he probably will be taking more and more time off. Eventually, he'll always come back. But there will be times where we'll be wishing, man, I wish John Cena was around. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't think Boris is going to be saying that. Dolph Ziggler bringing out his own character. I think we saw that a little bit, even though he used the super kick to finish off Bray Wyatt tonight. I think we saw, hopefully, some seeds planted for Ziggler sort of breaking out as himself as a character. You know, he's got some Shawn Michaels in him, no doubt about it. But I don't think he's necessarily a Shawn Michaels copy. He's not fake Diesel to Shawn's Diesel or anything like that. It's not that close of a comparison. But I do think he's taken things here and there from HBK and used that in his repertoire. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that as long as he feels like a different character. Boris does bring up a very good point about SmackDown being a wrestling show. And during the original roster split, SmackDown was the wrestling show. It was the show that had the strong wrestlers on it. And I think there was a misguided assumption. It was never stated, to my knowledge, by WWE that, hey, SmackDown's going to be this show and Raw's going to be this. I think the assumption was there based on what the split was last time. The assumption was there with Daniel Bryan going to SmackDown and being the authority figure. Although I hate to break it to people, but Daniel Bryan has no real say in the booking. If he did, maybe SmackDown would be more of the wrestling show. But the thing you have to look at, and I think the reason that Raw has taken over more as the wrestling show is one of it is, you know, we had four matches on tonight's show and none of them went very long. And that's not something I thought of as a byproduct of the roster split, that you'd have fewer matches on SmackDown that went shorter time. Think about it, you have a smaller roster to choose from, especially once you've taped main event and superstars, unless you want the guys working twice in one night. But also the depth isn't as strong either. And you know, ratings are important, both storyline and in real life. So you don't want to just put the Mojo Rawleys on there to wrestle 10-minute matches in the middle of SmackDown. Raw has 3 hours to fill, 3 hours plus. So it makes sense when you look at it from that point of view that Raw would want to have the stronger wrestlers and be more of the wrestling show because they have more time to fill. So they're able to put those 15 to 20 minute matches on Raw and be able to get away and be able to fill more time doing that than on SmackDown. So I think there was this fallacy in believing that SmackDown would once again be the wrestling show. Even a fallacy that there should be a wrestling show versus an entertainment show. that's not necessarily even how the breakdown should go or will go. So maybe it was a fallacy even believing that the breakdown was going to go like that. But I think it makes sense now looking at it that Raw would be that wrestling-heavy show just because it has more time to fill. So we'll see if that stays true going forward. As Boris brought up, we're only 2 weeks into the post-roster split experiment. So we'll see if that trend continues here. Next up on the phone line is the 540 area code. 540, you're on the post-SmackDown livecast. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, this is Michael from Northwest Virginia. How are you?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
Great. I want to start off, I've been each week since the draft, I've been taking some notes, and I want to go over those with you real quick, and then I got probably two talking points maybe you can respond to.
Okay.
First off, I wasn't surprised by any of the finishes to any of the matches tonight, with the exception of much hope that Dolph would win because he needs it. If you pushed him that hard the first week, why would you not keep going the distance this week? Hopefully, I don't know if you saw, Nash tweeted out something about he wants to be his bodyguard just like he was to Shawn. You know, not that they're going that direction, but that's kind of the direction they need to go with him right now. I saw the glimpse of the heel aspect. We need to bring back heel Ziggler is what needs to happen, in my opinion. I agreed with you totally. I like the differences that we saw this week from last. SmackDown clearly won this week. We had the Vault Villains versus American Alpha. Tremendous debut, but it takes two teams to be involved in that, and I think a lot of credit needs to go to the Bald Villains for that, making Alpha look as good as they were. I like the walkout that they did with Brock, kind of like they did back in the Nitro era, that backstage, you know, type of atmosphere. I thought maybe he should have fought more, but I'm kind of undecided on that because, you know, he's the Beast, so he should have fought more. But then again, we've seen that too many times, so just you got your business done and get out of Dodge. And that's,
yeah.
And I want to point out the only ha-ha that we saw tonight, I think, was Rhino and Heath, and I thought that was a great touch with them. Thinking back to last week's SmackDown, going, well, where's Rhino? You brought him out, and he did this, you know, this little thing here, and we haven't seen him yet. So those are my notes for the night. Oh, well, one more. Eva Marie. I think I was on the phone when she came out last week, so I didn't quite hear her entrance. And I never got really go back and watch it. But now that I saw it this week, I really paid close attention. I know she hasn't been known as the best wrestler, but I love the product. If a new fan tuned in tonight and watched it, that was great. She walked out like she knew she was the, you know what?
She was a star.
She was a star. And I was hoping to God when she stepped in the ring that she asked for somebody to take her robe off, and she did. The only extra thing I would have thought that she should have called for the rope. That was ultimate heel heat. When she feigned the injury, the first thing that I thought of was Brian Pillman. Run with that as long as you can with her until you feel like you can get some money out of her. And eventually, you know, back to the old military saying, she's going to have to, like you said earlier, eventually, there's going to be a point where the metal meets the meat. She's going to have to get in the ring and wrestle, and that's the bottom line on that.
Mm-hmm.
My two talking points, I'll start with the biggest one. Well, I'll talk about, I think the reason that SmackDown lost last week, because they had a more of an uphill battle than we necessarily thought. They had to establish more things. They had to establish a number one contender. They only had four matches and 2 hours to do it in, and they felt like they had to showcase everyone on the roster. Last week, every single person on the roster that was drafted was on there, except American Alpha. So 30 out of 32, we'll exempt that two, so we'll just say 30 people. This week, we only saw 22 out of the 32. And I think following the Raw hot shot from last week, they were capitalizing on wanting to get people to tune into that SmackDown, and that's why it worked. And to my third point, I was tickled tonight. My girlfriend, without my provocation, she tuned in, recorded, and tuned in to SmackDown on her own. I didn't ask her to do it, and she watched it. And I got to tell you, when AJ and Cena came on, she had legitimate, like, y'all talk about that perspective every now and then. She had legitimate heel hate for AJ.
Huh.
It was amazing to hear her talk about, and I noticed, I was watching it, and right when AJ started clapping, I was talking to a friend of mine on the phone, and I started clapping, and then AJ started clapping, and I was like, yes, that's exactly what I would have done, because he hit it, that's good heel stuff. I saw those, the fans, parents in the crowd, and this is what I think she may have seen. The parents in the crowd look legitimately scathed. Like, I don't want my child hearing this. I'm about to walk out. And I thought about that's that old heel heat that we've not seen for years.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to hear her perspective. She was sending me Snapchats on it, and I was like, wow. And she was sending me, like, let's go Cena, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I guess that's where the fan base lies. I'm going to leave you with that. But that was my biggest takeaway from the night, was hearing from a, we'll say, a non-fan, from somebody who never watched it before. Start there, maybe work backwards. But that was it really knocked my socks. I don't know if you have any other questions for me on that, but she hates AJ.
Yeah, I was just going to ask what level of fandom she was. If she was a casual fan who watched maybe when you watched, or was she just a complete non-fan who had no knowledge of the product at all?
She's only briefly watched when I've watched. And I've offered to, you know, I've been to a lot of events here recently, offered to take her, doesn't really want to go. Told her, you know, anybody who ever goes to an event, you have a great time, period, whether you're a fan or not.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
And I've done that a couple times with a couple different friends, and they're like, that was the best damn time I ever had. And we're getting there. But it was interesting that she watched it tonight on her own, because she was curious, because I kind of talk about it here and there. And she tuned in. She watched the whole show. She liked it from top to bottom. She was all for Dolph. She goes, I like this Dolph guy and everything that he talked about. And I was like, really? And I was like, well, tell me more. A lot of good insight that you can't get, like I've heard Wade say, from his perspective, your perspective, and then like even from mine, I'm sure. But just want to leave you with that tonight. I thought SmackDown clearly won this week, and that's the reason they won. Looking forward to many more.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, that's a lot of interesting points. I'll touch on a few of them. But I think it's so key and it's so interesting to me to watch with a non-fan or go to an event with a non-fan. And, you know, the people who subscribe to The Torch, the people who follow wrestling online, the people who listen to livecasts, you know, we're kind of immersed in and we talk sometimes about the wrestling bubble that people who work in wrestling are in. I think sometimes there's a wrestling bubble that really hardcore fans and people who, like me and like others who write about wrestling, there's a certain bubble that they're in too, that they don't have, and I'll use that word again that Michael brought up, they don't have that same perspective on what's going on that casual fans or non-fans do. So I think it's not only valuable for WWE, because they're always trying to attract new fans. That's the lifeblood of their business, is trying to get new fans and invest in the product. But to watch it with a non-fan and just kind of pick their brain, or just kind of let them say what they're thinking at certain times, and it provides a completely different point of view from something that we may take for granted, or something that we may be hypercritical of, that a non-fan watching for the first time doesn't necessarily care about. Like, that's not something that they get hung up on. So that's such a valuable tool for WWE and for, I think, us to get someone, you know, you have to have someone willing to do it to watch it with you or what have you. But I think that's really a valuable tool to have. one of the points Michael brought up was SmackDown. They had more to do to establish last week, and that's an interesting thought. You know, Raw has been 3 hours on Monday nights for the longest time, so chances are Raw didn't get a lot of new viewers with last week's episode. So they could kind of play status quo a little bit. SmackDown moving to Tuesday nights, so possibility of a new audience on a new night. Not only that, but Raw regularly outdrew SmackDown, so you have to imagine you're getting some new eyeballs that only watched Raw. So you had to establish some certain parameters on SmackDown. And even tonight, you had Dean Ambrose introduce himself in a way that was that kind of it caught me off guard for a second, and I didn't, you know, I kind of forgot about it by the end of the promo, but Dean Ambrose kind of introduced himself and talked a little bit about who he was, as if WWE was anticipating some new viewer tonight, or anticipating that SmackDown would see more new viewers than Raw would, or something like that. So it's not something I thought about, but Michael brings up a good point that SmackDown may have had more establishing of the characters or establishing of the actual show to do last week. And this week they could kind of sail a little smoother. Some of the other things he talked about, Heel Ziggler, we mentioned. Credit to the Vaudevillains for helping make American Alpha look good. I'm of the opinion that American Alpha generally doesn't need a lot of help to look good. But you know, the Vaudevillains are an opponent that Alpha has worked with in NXT. So if you weren't going to have them face a job tag team, a local talent or what have you, I think the Vaudevillains were a fine choice to have them go against here. The Ascension wrestled on the secondary show that was taped before SmackDown. Breeze and Fandango had their thing during the show. So really it had to be the Vaudevillains or local talent. I'm of the opinion that they played the Lesnar thing right, where he didn't attack any of the security guards. I liked it, and the announcers made note of this. Hey, he came in here to do one piece of business. That was attack Orton and then leave. You know, he wasn't there looking for a fight. He wasn't there looking to try to beat up security guards or raging out of his mind. He was there to deliver the F5 to Orton and then leave peaceably. And I thought that was a nice twist to his character, because we have so often seen him get in that rage where he just beats up everybody and everything in sight. So I thought that was nice. The Rhino Slater follow-up, I thought it was a little too cute to have Rhino gore Slater just at that moment when Brian was going to announce him as Slater's opponent. I thought for anyone with half a brain could figure out that was a little hokey, a little cheesy, and but you know, it was the one time WWE went for somewhat comedy on this show, so I can give him a pass for that. And it's, you know, it's Rhino Slater, so it's not like it's a main event feud that WWE is asking us to turn off our brains for. Eva Marie's entrance, yeah, I'll talk smack about Eva Marie's in-ring work. I'll put down her promo ability, but she carries herself like a star, and that entrance with the narration is so different, and it's very star worthy, and it sets her apart from the other women on the roster. And that's what is needed of someone who comes up from NXT and is getting called up. So I applaud WWE for what they've done to try to make Eva Marie a star, but at some point all smoke and mirrors are going to have to go away, and she's going to have to do something of value. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see if she can carry her end of the bargain on that one. So thank Michael for that call, bringing up a lot of good points there, a lot of good talking points on that one.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWT PWTorch.com/Amazon. That's PWTorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
We go to our next call, which is from the 310 area code. 310, you are on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Josh, and I'm from Los Angeles. I actually talked to you earlier, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Josh. Thanks for calling in tonight.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about the tag belts, and they showed it on the post game, which I was disappointed at. But, I mean, I understand they're trying a new thing with the post show. They're pretty much trying to take your little slot right now with all of reviewing of wrestling, and they're going to try to use that time for themselves. So I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. They're threatened by my presence here on the post-SmackDown Live. I figured they better position something opposite that to challenge us here at the Torch.
Very clearly, because you know they know what we guys do up in the CW Torch. So, I tend to be optimistic about SmackDown and overall the grand scheme of things about this wrestling being a smart family. Obviously, learning from all your columns and everything at the CW Torch. And with that being said, you know, I think you touched upon this as well. It was going to be an uphill battle from SmackDown from day one. The reason why they drafted those particular wrestlers was because they felt those were the wrestlers that needed their time alone. If they were going to be on Raw, there'd just be another mid-carder. They wouldn't get the push they needed. And from looking at the roster, you know, I knew all they needed to do was to get a few big NXT call-ups, and the whole SmackDown roster changes completely just because of two big NXT call-ups. You know, and but that will be later in the future once they're ready. And not only that, I always felt that what SmackDown had going very well for them was because Raw being 3 hours, which was what we all saw this week, Raw was having trouble filling out this 3 hours, not like last week. But, you know, as everyone said, you know, Raw can't keep up the same type of mentality, the same type of show like last week forever. You have to have a calm down. You have to have a point where the audience can relax, reflect, and be able to take up, be put through another high later on in the year. But I guess what my question is going to be based off is off the NXT. If you had, let's just say three, if you had three NXT call-ups in your pocket as a SmackDown commissioner, and whatever you want, you know, it could be the three big stars going for the championship or anyone on the NXT roster right now, who would your three call-ups be in order to change the SmackDown dynamic?
And I could choose anyone on NXT.
Anyone.
Well, Josh, thanks for calling. And before I answer that question, I will say our phone lines are open. That was the last call. So 646-721-9828 is the number to call. If you call right now, want to talk SmackDown, you'll get in right quick. Otherwise, I'll answer Josh's question, do some plugs, and be out of your hair. But if anyone wants to call in at 646-721-9828, I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks talking SmackDown here. Three calls. I mean, my immediate reaction to say Nakamura and Bayley are the first two. Nakamura would, you know, Nakamura fits anywhere. You know, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, he would truly fit anywhere. You know, looking at the SmackDown depth chart that James Caldwell put together on PWTorch.com after the draft, you've got Dean Ambrose and you've got John Cena at the top of the babyface roster, and then you've got a steep drop-off to Dolph Ziggler, although Ziggler being positioned as a title contender at SummerSlam. So Nakamura could conceivably be the number one babyface on SmackDown immediately, you know, considering John Cena is part-time. Cena is always going to be sort of the de facto number one babyface, but as far as full-timers, Nakamura, I think, would be number one. I think he would be above Dean Ambrose. Maybe not immediately, but soon. You know, Ambrose is the champion, so I guess you've got to kind of give the nod to him as the number one babyface, but Nakamura certainly would have the potential to leapfrog Ambrose with relative ease as the number one babyface on SmackDown, and deepens a relatively thin babyface roster on SmackDown. Again, John Cena, you know, you're going to need help on the house shows, the SmackDown brand house shows, so Nakamura will help there. John Cena only doing part-time. You've got Dean Ambrose. You've got Nakamura. That immediately stretches things out. Bayley, you know, we talked earlier in the show about how thin the women's roster is. And Bayley would allow some flexibility with Naomi because she can be babyface or heel. Right now she's slotted as a babyface because it's 3-3. With Bayley, you bring her up. She's a number two, again, possibly a number one babyface, leapfrogging Becky Lynch. It would be Lynch, Bayley, Carmella, which is a lot stronger. Naomi goes to the heel side, strengthens the heel side. All of a sudden, it's Natalia, Naomi, Alexa Bliss, Eva Marie. So that makes actually Bayley going to SmackDown makes both the babyface and the heel side of SmackDown even stronger. So, those would be two. If I had to pick a third, I'm tempted to give the nod. I think it would be between. I think it would be between Samoa Joe and Aries. That's off the top of my head, without scouring the NXT roster. That would be off the top of my head, and both of those guys would go to the heel side. So you bring in Nakamura to strengthen the babyface side, you bring in Aries or Joe for the heel side. So that would be, and that would be. Those are the obvious ones too. I'm not trying to be cute here and go for an under the radar pick or anything like that. I think the cream of the crop in NXT is quite obvious, and there's a drop off from there. Not necessarily. Well, yeah, talent-wise and name value recognition-wise. But there's a pretty steep drop-off past the top guys in NXT. Hideo Itami's working his way back, so you've got to take him into consideration. But I don't remember this much of a drop-off from the top-tier guys to the lower-tier guys before. So, that's just kind of where I am with the NXT guys and my reasoning for selecting those guys. But, you know, there are others in NXT that are certainly deserving of the opportunity. We're going to see some cruiserweights likely get called up for Raw on the presumably after the Cruiserweight Classic tournament finishes up and the Raw Cruiserweight division is established. Once again, you know, I know that conventional wisdom says that the cruiserweights should have been on SmackDown, what with Daniel Bryan being the GM and SmackDown historically having been the wrestling-heavy show. But, again, you need to come up with matches for 3 hours of Raw, and the cruiserweights will offer something different, even if it's not the high flying that we're used to seeing in WCW. The cruiserweights will offer something different, and when you've got 3 hours to fill, you need that something extra. So, one more phone call here, it looks like, and then we'll call it a night. This is the 904 area code, 904. You're on the live cast. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
Jackie Drayton. I'm calling for Jackson, from Jacksonville, Florida. Yo.
Hey, Jackie.
Check this out. The subject that I want to talk about tonight is this. My boy Randy Orton going, I just got a feeling Randy Orton going to beat Brock Lesnar's ass. I can see that just coming. Because Brock Lesnar is not gonna win.
I mean, what stands out to you as a reason why you don't think Lesnar's gonna win?
Because number one, Randy Orton is the Viper. Randy Orton is a legend killer. And Randy Orton can beat down anybody, anytime, any place, anywhere. See, WWE did something stupid in my opinion. Instead of Randy fighting Brock Lesnar, they should have had Randy fighting the champ for the title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of stupid. Like, if you're going to make a main event match with a main event superstar, why would you have, and plus this was like when he returned and all that too? Randy Orton has been in the business since, what, 2002?
Yeah, he's been in the business. I mean, his father, he's got a long family lineage in the business. So he's been technically in the business even longer than that.
That's what I'm talking about. Because basically last time I checked, Randy Orton became the youngest world heavyweight champion August 15, 2004. He beat Chris Benoit, one of the greatest legends in the history of WWE. Even though Benoit with a dumbass freaking killed himself and his wife and all that shit. But other than that, he's still a great legend in my opinion.
So Jackie thinks that Randy Orton should go over Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Listen, Wade Keller and I talked a little bit about this, and how I brought up that I think this is going to be probably the most interesting result of the big matches at SummerSlam, of which there are many. I think the SummerSlam card is stacking up to be pretty strong right now. But this is something I go back and forth on. You know, Orton, it's his first match, not first match, but in 9 months, this is his first big match. And with Lesnar, you know, how failing the USADA tests before the UFC fight that he had. Gosh, that's hard because you also don't, you know, Lesnar's mystique has been killed off a little bit somewhat by those failures, even after he beat Mark Hunt at the UFC 200. So if he had won cleanly, I think there's an argument to be made for him to go over Orton. You know, Orton, this isn't going to be Orton's first match back on TV. He's beaten The Miz. He's beaten Fandango by disqualification. But it was made pretty clear that he was going to win tonight over Fandango if Lesnar hadn't interfered. So Orton is already kind of racking up wins heading into SummerSlam. So maybe a loss at SummerSlam, therefore, won't hurt him as much because he'd already built up some wins beforehand. Does the finish include, you know, Orton Lesnar probably going to be a one-off here. Does the finish include something where Orton goes off into his next feud, or maybe seeds are planted for Lesnar's next feud, whenever that is? Does that play into the finish? That's going to be really interesting. Right now, if I had to make a guess, if I had to make a prediction, I would go Orton winning. I'm not terribly confident about that, but that's where I stand as of 11:35 Eastern time on August 2nd, 2000 and what year is this? 2016, I guess. So that's where I would go right now, but that's completely subject to change depending on how the rest of the buildup looks. It's pretty even right now with both men hitting their finishers this week, so we'll see where it goes from there. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is the second episode of the post-game show on SmackDown here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I've really enjoyed taking these calls these last 2 weeks, and look forward to, in the future, talking again with you guys about SmackDown. Again, I was on the livecast earlier today with Wade Keller. That's posted on PWTorch.com now for VIP members, as well as my chat last night with James Caldwell about Raw. We talked about 90 minutes about Monday Night Raw. So always enjoyable to get to host these livecasts and get to take calls and get to talk to everybody. So I appreciate everybody calling in. Check out, if you're not a member, PWTorch.com/GoVIP to be a member. You just get tons of stuff. I mean, just go to PWTorch.com and see what you get for free. And there's so much more beyond that that you get as a VIP member. So I can't stress that enough. I can't tell you enough to go VIP if you're not already. So that does it for me here on August 2nd, 2016. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this has been the post-game show for WWE SmackDown here on the livecast.